It's whenever you're listening to this, and you know what that means. It's the Week on Wrestling podcast from WrestleWolf. I'm your host, or one of your hosts, Dr. Damian Gibson. And joining me is the man that when he speaks, the neckbeards listen. It's the King of Marks, Paulie T. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well. Not only do some of the neckbeardies listen along, but this week I was very excited when I got a reaction from a real performer. I did.
Yeah, what happened? What happened? Have you been on Twitter again?
Yeah, the Twitters. So I just sent out a clarification tweet to find out, just to confirm what the difference is between the House of Black and the Kings of the Black Throne. Mm-hmm. And I got a like from yourself and a couple of other fellow marks out there. And then there was Brody King. And I thought, okay, I've seen some of these before. Like, it's not really going to be the real person, is it? Because normally you go, okay, do they have the blue tick? No. Well, it's probably not the real person. But then I followed back and was like, yeah, that's him. That's Brody King.
Yeah. Yeah, then you messaged me and I checked it out and I was like, oh, shit, that's pretty cool. So I think so far it's not a huge body count of AEW superstars who have liked or interacted with us. We've got Red Velvet and Brody King. That's it. We've got two. So,
oh, yeah.
There was a back and forth with Dolph Ziggler very early on when we were doing some WWE stuff. And, I don't know if Dolph's a WrestleWolf fan. We'll just put it that way. Anyway, we're in DC this week. Pretty much mainly AEW chat. I didn't really watch anything else. I don't know if you did. There's a little bit of GCW for me to talk about right at the end, but I'm not an expert. Yeah, I'll just talk about it now. I bought GCW's World on GCW pay-per-view from the Hammersmith Ballroom in New York, where a lot of ECW events took place. And
the home of ECW, yep.
Man, it looks amazing. The pay-per-view, like, just, it's one of those things where I instantaneously was like, one, I get this. I get why people love this. Two, I love it. And I can't wait to watch more. It's very obvious a homage to ECW. And if you haven't watched any of it, I would really recommend jumping on board. And if you love ECW or even like ECW, you should check out GCW. But AEW is the main topic of conversation as per usual. We're in DC this week. A lot of masks in the crowd, you noticed, Paulie?
Marks?
Or masks?
Masks?
Marks in masks? That's a good warm-up. We should do that vocal warm-up before every episode.
Marks, good idea.
In masks. Marks
in masks.
And there was some a lot of signs. There's like heaps of signs. Like, we're getting to Attitude Era level of signs in the crowd at the moment. Were there any that caught your eye in particular?
Oh, there were a couple that made me giggle. One is just as pure and simple. I like Cody. Yeah, I pay that. I like it. And and of course, another one that was nice and simple. And MJF still watches it WWE. So got a rag on the Fed.
Yeah, it's the worst insult you can give to a mark these days. There's a lot of good signs in AEW. I feel like the quality of signs are great. There'll be a lot of random ones. There are obviously a bunch of Arsenal supporters in the crowd this week who had
Arsenal. Noticed that too.
Yeah, like Gooners love AEW and Arsenal love AEW and stuff like that. I love, so, like, if the signs aren't impeding people's enjoyment of the show, let it happen. It's great.
I'm honestly trying to remember what I was talking about when I mentioned masks. Was because I'm sure I do remember a couple of weeks prior there were people wearing Danhausen masks. So potentially it was that, or potentially it was a reference to the missing Ray Phoenix. But yeah, oh well.
I'm still if there is a public event, I'm still checking to see whether people are wearing masks or not. I do find that very interesting.
Right. Now, we're talking about face masks to protect your health.
COVID, man.
That is what I was talking about at the time. See, stupid me back then. Yeah. Right. So this is the point I was trying to make. This is great to see lots of people wearing face masks to protect themselves and their fellow humans.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Not to get too bogged down in COVID stuff, but I think you have to be at least double vaxxed to go to most AEW shows these days. So anyway.
I did see a bit of news come up about that for that particular show, confirming that these are the rules. So I guess, look, along those lines, there was a bit of a thread that popped up based on something that CM Punk said, that he was pretty upset about how some fans were following them in airports and hotels getting real close to them. And he's just like, people who are out there doing that, don't.
Yeah.
And then so someone responded back, oh, what about this? And that was when they put a little gif in of when he ran down the ramp and did like a stage dive into the crowd surfing, and he came back and said, look, and dropped the C-bomb. I was pretty surprised to see. He said, this was well before Omicron. I had been vaccinated and there were no requirements for any further requirements. All requirements had been met, basically, you know, like,
yeah.
What has happened since then is a whole new world.
I mean, it's just common sense stuff, really. No matter where you're at, as far as, I mean, I would hope that you're vaccinated and all that sort of thing. But especially if you're not vaccinated, don't go up to people and try and hug them and, you know, like, for God's sake, just respect people's boundaries. Look, here's a rule. If you see wrestlers in an airport, they're traveling. They're going either to or from work. So give them a break. You know what I mean? Let them read the paper or play some games or eat something in peace. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to meet them, go to a meet and greet or, you know, anyway. Speaking of wrestlers that you would not go up to anywhere at any time, no matter what he was doing, Mox is back. What an amazing return. The first 10 minutes of Dynamite was devoted to Mox. I've actually watched that promo 3 times and have watched it from a different angle on BTE or the entrance at the very least. What did you make of Mox's return?
Oh, look, I thought he was instantly on fire, and he was out there ready to prove himself. Not sure about the drinking blood comment, but I was hyped up to see him perform again. He looks so healthy and just angry and ready to go.
He looked younger to me.
Oh yeah,
not to put him down too much for drinking the past or whatever, but it is really amazing to see what 3 to 4 months of good living can do. I mean, he's slimmed down a little bit as well, so I assume that maybe there's been a change in his exercise regime, because to cut that much, you know, as someone who has quit drinking, I did not lose that much weight. So I assume there's been a change in...
Maybe you didn't, my friend, but you weren't out there throwing your body around the room, 3 or 4 nights a week and training to be able to back up that kind of activity.
I know it's not a valid, but I'm just saying, like, I did nothing and no weight was lost. So obviously something was happening. I mean, if it was just the same exercise routine without the alcohol, that backs up what I'm saying, right? Like, he looks amazing. He looks 10 years younger. He looks like Shield. He looks like when he debuted with the Shield. I a lot has been said about this, and I know there's a tendency for me to sort of get up on my soapbox about anything to do with alcohol or alcoholism or sobriety or whatever. And I don't think I'm going to do that on the podcast much anymore. All I would say is that it's really important for people who have gone through what Mox has gone through to talk about it. The one thing I really, really loved was that WWE, and this isn't even really me having a go, but WWE would have swept that under the carpet. They wouldn't have made a statement about it initially. They probably would have done the same thing, and like, especially for a big star like Mox, they would have supported him, helped him with rehab, all that kind of thing. But then he just would have come back. There would be no word about it. For Mox to come and cut a promo like that, and you just had to look at Twitter afterwards to see how many people it affected, that's huge. That does so much more than me saying anything about on the podcast or anything. And it's a really brave thing to do because it's hard when you change your life like that. So to come out on national television and talk about it like that, and to still sort of be in character and to cut an amazing promo, I mean, it was all phenomenal. So, yeah, and then we got to see him wrestle on Rampage against Ethan Page, which was fine. Was there anything to take out of that match?
There was no need for him to come out and destroy him in 2 minutes. There was absolutely no need. I think Ethan Page would have been buried, and this he's on a pretty hot trajectory at the moment. So why ruin that? And he ended up getting a chokehold. 3 seconds later, Ethan Page just pops up and he's like, "Where am I? What happened?" Okay, so you know, it's kind of beautifully written, really. That kind of thing. It's like, okay, right, I've been out for a while. I'm a little rusty, but look, I still got it. And you know, give me in a couple more matches, and I'll be killer. That's the feeling I got out of that. And that initial promo for him to be able to continue that character that had already been established, he had to come out and do that. There's no way that he could just go on and appeared at ringside or walk through the crowd because he's not going to appear any other way, and then just start brawling. Like, he had to come out and say, right, this is why I have not been here, and this is how I feel, and I'm going to fuck you all up. And it's like, oh, yeah, you had to do that. That was right. Awesome.
Yeah. Just a couple of lines from that. I'm sure everyone's spoken about them already, but I don't run from... I run from demons, I just kick their asses. That was one. And the only thing I drink these days is blood.
Yeah.
I know, that worked on me, man. The way he said it, I was like, oh, holy shit. Mox seriously intimidates me when he comes out to the ring, and I'm sitting on the other side of the world on a big comfy couch. So I can only imagine what it's like to be there. But he is a massive star, maybe AEW's biggest star. I know a lot of people would argue with me about that, but he's just got something. There's an X factor, there's an enigma about him, or he's an enigma. And I'm super happy that he's back. Speaking of enigmas, what is going on with Pac?
Well, I was here last week gloating about the fact that I'd predicted this indoctrination correctly, and now he comes back on video, which didn't really sell the point very well, to say, you thought I was coming to join you, but I'm not. Look, I can actually see. I'm like, ah, oh, come on, man.
I mean, if this is shaping up to a Pac versus Aleister Black match, I mean, we desperately want to see that, right?
No shit.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, there is a silver lining to not getting the prediction correct. But, you know, also, maybe you have. Who knows? Maybe this is just another swerve.
Yeah, I guess. There are a couple other things happening where we thought, this is what we're being told, or this is what how we're supposed to interpret this, and now, oh no, right. Fair enough. And maybe,
I'm kind of I'm digging on it though. Like I'm liking now that Brody King is there. I'm more into the House of Black storyline.
Oh look, he's a bloody monstrous brute of a man. Aleister Black's not much smaller and he can fly around like crazy. So, yeah, they're delightful to watch.
Mm. We had a actually, I was just going to say, I said the word swerve, and it reminded me. Well, we don't have it on our run sheet. There's about 9 wrestlers who all come out of their 90-day non-compete clause either this week or the week after. So I think Isaiah Swerve Scott may be one of those. Oh, God, there's literally 7 other people, and I can't think of any of them. But anyway, just I wouldn't not be watching Dynamite in the next couple of weeks, put it that way.
The main one that I am surprised hasn't appeared yet is Bray Wyatt, but also probably more than that, I thought Johnny Gargano would have been out there by now.
Yeah, I think Gargano might be one of those. Isn't he one of the 9? I think he might be one of those guys whose 90-day compete comes up in the next couple of weeks.
Ah, right. So he obviously had a different deal to Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, who knows with WWE contracts, man? They really don't make any sense at all, as far as that thing. Another storyline that we thought we knew what was going to happen and kind of got derailed by the end of the week, thanks to the vid, was the Roppongi Vice versus Young Bucks.
Yeah, that was
spin-off storyline.
That was a bit of a disappointment because. Not only do I love to help, not only do I love to find out more about the history of, and especially recent history of New Japan, having seen, you know, a small few snippets here and there, but never really having the opportunity or the time to delve right into it. Seeing the clips of Roppongi Vice, who are Trent Beretta, and Rocky Romero,
yeah.
Rocky
Romero. Sorry, man, keep going.
Rocky Romero and Trent Beretta, who have both been playing roles as best friends and or Chaos recently in AEW, now that Chaos, the New Japan faction, has adopted them. I did not know that Trent Beretta was even on the New Japan roster. So it was great to see that history of them in great matches after great matches with the Young Bucks, and for them to reminisce with another go on AEW television. I thought it was a mouth-watering opportunity, and then it was stolen away from me.
Yeah. So if you didn't know, Rocky Romero unfortunately contracted COVID, which means that he couldn't wrestle. But what we did get in its place was a Trent Beretta versus Nick Jackson match, which I really enjoyed. And I just thought, could either of these guys go solo and make a run of it?
I don't see why not. They just need to be able to be given, booked in the right matches and given enough time to show what they can do. Yeah, absolutely.
Would you ever break up the Young Bucks?
Hearing you say that reminds me of an image I saw today, a little animation that Matt Hardy shared on the Twitters, saying that this happened, I think it was 13 years ago, and that this was he entering the ring after Matt was Matt entering the ring after Jeff was already in there. He picked up a chair and was going to attack, I believe it was Edge on the mat, and then ended up turning around and belting Jeff with the chair in the head. That kind of a team breakup dynamic with the Young Bucks. Look, I can't really say that I can go back and think of any key tag team duos who've had a great breakup storyline and then much has really happened after that to justify it. Like those matches at the time, they give you the great shock factor moment, but then you know, that one of them might get, you know, two or three decent matches. Typically the other just sort of, I don't know, fades away into another faction somewhere else, or you know, something a little bit more disappointing. Look, I'm totally, totally open to be proven wrong many times, but yeah, nothing really springs to mind. So having said all that, I'd probably go with no.
maybe Edge and Christian. Maybe. I mean, their feud was okay after they broke up. Obviously, Edge was pushed a lot more than Christian was by Vince. Christian still ended up winning the IC belt a couple of times, right? And I'm kind of grasping at straws here a little bit. That's the only thing I can think of where the two tag team guys kind of went on to one a lot more successfully than the other to have solo careers.
Yeah, I mean, from Christian's perspective, you know, pretty decent getting a mid-card run for a while, but yeah, nothing like the heights of what Edge got to
imagine
to live
being
through.
Vince McMahon and looking at Christian and going, nah, ugly man, can't put him on TV. Can't do anything with him. He's a terrible wrestler, but everybody in the back says that he's the best worker here. He's not good on the mic. He's the funniest dude on the show. Anyway, couldn't do anything with Christian, though. Speaking of win-loss records, what's going on with the win-loss records? We're two and a bit years in. Is the wins actually matter in AEW? Is that something that we can still hang our hat on as AEW fanboys, or is that something that's starting to lose its luster a little bit when we get 28 no win records for Jay Cargill, etc.?
Well, I reckon the rankings, although influenced by the win-loss records, are certainly determined by Khan, comma, T, full stop. you know, there'll be some teams that have had, you know, a 8-0 win-loss record in the last few weeks in various dark and or live TV showings. But just because these other hot team has just gone 3-1, we'll give them a number one ranking for some reason. So it doesn't really, it's certainly still part of the mix, and it doesn't, it means more than it ever did when we were watching WWE. It still means more.
Yeah.
However, I'm a bit tired of hearing about undefeated records. We've got Adam Cole, CM Punk, Jade Cargill, MJF still claims he has an undefeated record, even though he did get beaten after a second referee came into the match and said that Jericho had his leg on the rope, which that's never been done before and supposedly shouldn't happen because, you know, the ref didn't see it. So, and then he lost again 2 weeks ago because of the first DQ on live AEW TV. And I had a feeling there was another. And so, no, I guess my point is, like, after, because I've been watching, you know, wrestling for a couple of decades, and the only response you would ever have, usually up until a few months ago, when someone talked about an undefeated wrestler, was like, "Oh yeah, Goldberg, he was rad," but but I don't know, it's starting to drag on me, and I can't really put my finger on what it is. How are you? What do you feel about the way these records are being presented?
Yeah, the only thing, I'm willing to give Cole and Punk a pass because I think that's actually a really long, slow storytelling technique where the two of them will face off as undefeated. they both kind of came at the same time. And I don't know if you remember, but initially they were both talking a lot of smack about each other for like 2 weeks, and then it completely dissipated. So right. I'm still holding on to that I think that's what they'll do with those guys. But yeah, I mean, the Cargill thing, what I agree with everything that you've said, and it does bug me when you're watching it, and I'll either be messaging you or Sir Kayfabe about stuff, Matthew, and you'll inevitably get a message from someone saying, oh, I didn't realize. And it's always someone that is a bit iffy or a bit new, like the Varsity Blondes or something. You know, the Varsity Blondes have got a 31-0 record this year. Like, I've seen them on TV once. Yeah. And then you realize it's from dark and dark elevations. Like, I have a real bee in my bonnet about dark and dark elevation, full stop. I just think there's too – I understand you got a big roster. I understand it's free. It's, you know, a little taste to put out on YouTube to get people to come and buy fight subscriptions and stuff like that. But I just think if you have to at some point, and I know they can point to YouTube figures and say, oh, 200,000, 300,000 people are watching it. That's still, you know, 25% of the people who are watching the weekly TV show just in America alone on cable TV. So the vast majority of people who are watching it don't watch Dark and Dark Elevation. So it means nothing. So you're right. It just becomes this thing where all of a sudden a competitor has a 52-1. It was like the one that I noticed the other day was that Frankie Kazarian is the second most winningest wrestler in AEW history.
I saw them bring that up too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, great. I can't remember the last time I saw him. The last time I saw him win some matches was with Christopher Daniels when they were tagging before Daniels retired from AEW. So I don't know when these matches were happening. And then you go, oh, yeah, Dark. So
yeah, well, thanks. You've jogged my memory. So this is probably really the key factor in why hearing these huge records is really dragging its feet and becoming too tiresome. That's it. That's the reason. Now, look, Dark. Certainly, Dark Elevation has been brought on board to be able to give new talent who are not contracted a gig. They give them, as far as I know, they just give them, you know, one match or two matches. And if they're able to cut it in the ring, then they potentially are brought up later on. Mm. Or maybe they might go through the Dark Elevation, then Dark, and then potentially they might be a jobber, and then maybe they might get a spot or something like that. So that's their, I mean, it's quite literally called Dark. That's what, you know, dark shows in previous promotions. That's what they would do, is they would either yeah. just have a match that's put together to entertain the local crowd, may not run along with the current, feuds or whatever the themes they've got on TV. And might just bring in someone who hasn't been employed before, but give them a go and see what they can, if they can cut the mustard.
Would a simple fix just be Excalibur saying that? Would that make it less annoying to be like, you know, to bring up the win loss record and then say, you know, so he's really been killing it in the minors or something like that?
Potentially, yeah, potentially. Yeah, I'm gonna have to mull on this one, I think, a little further and see, you know, what other ways we can suggest to kind of tweak this method of getting their records across, which doesn't really sell it right.
No, it doesn't sell anybody, and I think that's the problem. It doesn't put anybody over. Everybody knows what it is, so it's just kind of this thing that just has sort of putted along for two and a bit years, and everyone's like, why are you doing that? Another thing that frustrates me, and I'm glad this has been brought up between the two of us, is, and I've brought it up a couple of times on the podcast previously, is the amount of time that either a tag partner or Well, yeah, a tag partner spends in the ring when they haven't been tagged in. It's something that really, it's a big sort of Jim Cornette. I find myself sounding like Jim Cornette when I bitch about it. But it is, you know, Jim Ross sort of bitches about it as well. And I agree with them because the whole idea is to try and put on a predetermined wrestling match that looks real.
Exactly.
And when you've got a referee that, what do you think of it? Because it frustrates the hell out of me. Where are you at it on this stuff?
Well, I can remember thinking about this years ago and throughout my time watching wrestling, just thinking, okay, well, that guy has been holding the rope for a while, standing in the corner waiting for his opportunity. He's now activated the tag, but the other guy is still in the ring and they're performing moves on. It's now 2-on-1. They're like, this is supposed to be a one-on-one match at a time, but you tag in and out. So why is that guy still in there? Oh, they're allowed 5 seconds. Oh, okay. So the referee counts, claps their hands, you know, 1, 2, 3. Okay, right, he's out now. You keep going. So, oh, hang on. What? They're still in there. What? Shouldn't that be a... Well, shouldn't they do something about that? And then,
Or at least have a situation where the referee is like making it look like he's trying to tell the wrestlers to get out of the ring.
Absolutely. And then this question that I had in my head, this thing that was bugging me for a while, came back when FTR became more and more popular. And one of their potential definitions of what FTR means was follow the rules. And they say that they must have a ring rope, and they will, you know, there must be, they will always follow the rules, and they will tag in and out. And when they're in matches, their opponents have to do that too. And their typical example of completely the opposite of that is the Lucha Brothers.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, they're completely right. However, I love them so much.
I think, to be fair to AEW, I think it is 10 seconds in AEW compared right. to WWE 5 seconds. But fuck, man. I mean, if there's a 3-on, like there's been for, what, a year and a half, almost basically since AEW started, talk of a trios belt at some point. I mean, once you start getting to trips, tag team matches, I mean, you end up with 6 people in the ring at once and the referee might as well just hit the showers because they don't, they're just not doing anything, you know?
Yeah.
And it is, I get frustrated at JR sort of burying stuff on commentary, but when he does do that with tag stuff in AEW, I really agree with it. I wish he wouldn't say it on air. He should be going to Tony Khan afterwards and going, this presentation doesn't look real. But yeah, it's frustrating. And I notice it more in AEW than I did in WWE. And I don't know what that is. I don't know whether it's just because I want AEW to succeed so badly and I'm paying more attention, but
quite possibly. And it's something that maybe you and I are both looking at this and going, you know, I want this to be something that I can look at. And when I suspend disbelief, as I like to do each week, and turn on the program, I go, oh, this match is a real sporting event, and I'm going to watch this guy and support that guy and whatever. And then I think, oh, hang on, now I've got to step back from that and go, well, what are we trying to say here, guys?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's still I think AEW still have this indie wrestling, and I'm starting to sound like the fucking Miz now. It has this like in your bingo halls, but there is an independent wrestling sort of attitude of like, who gives a fuck? Let's just be entertaining, and I love that. But I just think once you get to a point where you're on national TV and you're trying to sell pay per views and stuff like that, because does AEW want to have that 1.1, 1.2 million audience each week? Or do you want to grow that? I think if you want to grow it, then you need to start presenting the product just in a slightly more tight way. That's all.
Yeah, here.
Hey, I'm
kind of what I was getting at too.
I feel like I stole your thunder.
I want to be able to introduce people to it too, and be able to say, be able to explain what's going on. And if I can't, and I watch it every damn week, like it's going to be pretty annoying for me.
Yeah, it starts to get like Aussie rules football, where people are like, well, why did he get a free kick then? It's like, I don't.
I don't know.
I haven't known what the rules are for the last 12 years. Don't ask me.
Why? What? What is incorrect disposal? I don't know.
It seems like you can completely miss the ball with your foot now, and that's fine. Anyway, God, I sound like such an old man. Something happened on Twitter. There was a post Dynamite clip that happened on Twitter that I don't actually know much about that you wanted to talk about. What happened? What happened there?
Ah, oh, damn. I wish I could remember.
The last match was Sting and Darby.
Look, I think it was Tony coming out, and without warning, he got Sting to give a speech.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Okay, look, I'm really having to choke, mate. I should have put down a few more notes here. So I'm pretty confident this is what happened. Now that I dig back in the old memory files,
it is, because I actually watched the clip. I was just trying to set you up to make it sound like I didn't know what was going on.
You bastard!
Well, they were just trying to make it sound more like easy breezy, man. Yeah,
and it was pretty cool.
Got Sting to
He went right with it. He went right for it, and reminisced about performing in the building, in that particular building before, I believe. And it was just great.
Talked about writing his own ending was the main. You know, he was really thankful towards Tony. He brought up Tony because Tony Schiavone was in the ring with him as well, and he was like, you know, man, I'm just so thankful and grateful that I get to write my own ending. And then he like big upped Darby and said that, you know, Darby's going to be the future of AEW and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, and I think there was actually a nice little postscript to that where I saw a clip that Darby posted. He was recording himself, as he does quite often, doing like complete jackass stunts and craziness. But this time, he and Sting were leaving the building, going to their hotel or whatever
cave.
It was, or the airport. I don't know. And they were following a car, like not intentionally following it. They would just happen to be behind this car on a slow moving roadway, probably just trying to get out of the venue. And they were wearing they had plates on the back that somehow referenced AEW, or they had some stickers or something, so they could tell that they were AEW fans in there. So because of the traffic jam, they both got out of the car and like went right up to the windows and were like, "Hey, check us out! It's Sting and Darby."
I saw that. It was so great. The guys in the car's faces were like they were just so shocked. Like, "Hey!" But before they could work out what had happened, they'd gone again. They ran back into their car.
Yeah, so awesome. It's just great to see these guys that are having so much fun, so good at what they do, and letting the crowd, you know, come for the ride. Great.
Yeah, man. Did you I just brought it up because, you know, we hadn't talked about it. The mixed tag match, I really enjoyed that way more than I thought I was going to. Orange Cassidy, Chris Statlander versus Adam Cole, Bay, and the Doctor. What do you think of that?
I thought it was a good match. Blow it out of the park or anything, but yeah, definitely a good match. And
maybe I'm misjudging how good it was. I really enjoyed it. I really loved it.
No.
But I don't know if it was that great a technical match. I was just thoroughly entertained by it.
Look, I got the feeling that it wasn't particularly – I think it was somewhat loosely booked. There were just probably a few key spots that they'd lined up. And then the booker just thought, look, you guys are all damn good at what you do. Just string those points together and we'll have a great match. And it was. It was, you know, it was great, really good. One thing I did certainly think about it was Is this the first mixed tag match that we've ever seen? I think it might be.
Yeah, I can't. I was thinking about the same thing. I don't think. Yeah, I think it might be. I think it might be. I feel like I just want to apologize to Tony Khan. I feel like I went too hard on him about the Orange Cassidy. This always happens where I go hard on something and then the next week Tony does what I ask him to do. So the Adam Cole Orange Cassidy singles match is happening this week at Beach Break in Cleveland. I don't know, very, very
beachy.
What I did love about it is that the TV spot was released. So they released the TV spots on YouTube now, and the big people in the TV spot were Adam Cole and Orange Cassidy. So I apologize all those weeks and me saying, why are you not pushing Orange Cassidy? And Orange Cassidy is the star, and blah, 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 blah. Tony, I bow down to you again. I'm sorry. It's all in the plan. I should never doubt you ever again.
Hey, something that I wanted to mention about Orange Cassidy, and it's nothing about nothing, but at the moment in Melbourne, there's an exhibition center, a sort of art studio space. I'm not sure how else to describe it, but they've got this amazing audio-visual presentation set up on the wall about all of the artwork of Vincent van Gogh. And I went there because it was my wife and my anniversary. We went out there, had a great night.
Oh, nice.
There was plenty of images on the wall of the old Vincent because he used to like painting self-portraits. And there were quite often I see people and go, man, that reminds me. Your face looks so much like someone else I've seen before. And I went through a couple of people. I thought, oh, is it Bryan Danielson? Nah. And it was some other actor. Nah. And I reckon Orange Cassidy looks so much like Vincent van Gogh.
Yeah, he does a little bit. Do you want to see Billy Gunn versus Christian at all?
I wouldn't turn it off.
I found myself after the Gun Club beat down Christian this week. I was like, you know what? I would be into that. I would be into Christian versus Billy Gunn.
Yeah, give him 4.5 minutes, sure.
Yeah, man. Or like a 2-hour Iron Man match. If they're both like in immaculate condition for a couple of pension card holders. Are we going to get Latin American Exchange in AEW? Are we going to get Eddie Kingston and Santana and Ortiz joining up? It's only a matter of time before that happens, right?
Well, I guess it's potentially the outcome of one of this week's matches. We have Daniel Garcia and 2.0, who are getting so much fucking TV time every bloody week. What is it that Tony Khan loves about them so much? I mean, they're okay.
I think Daniel Garcia's got a lot of upside, and they're putting Garcia with 2.0 because he can't cut a promo.
Right. Wow. I mean, his match with Sammy Guevara, that was very good. Sammy was really good at putting him over on that one. Even though Sammy won, I mean, like it raised Daniel's profile. But anyway, so the match is those three dudes versus Jericho and Santana and Ortiz. So the suggestion is if Jericho doesn't pull his weight, they're going to hook their wagon up to somebody else, I guess.
Mm.
Look. I wouldn't be disappointed. I'd be happy to see them experiment with a different faction, but that means we've got the crumbling of the Inner Circle.
Yeah, I think it's probably time for that with the Inner Circle. The Inner Circle have been a really weird faction for me. I mean, as much as I've enjoyed them, like I think they've been really great, and it's just testament to Jericho can make anything work. They are a weird faction. I mean, like they don't look like they should. They don't look like they belong together. You know, there's a real sort of village people vibe with them at times. Where they're because they're all so different. You know, like I suppose they could be the strength. Anyway, it's been 2 and a bit years of the Inner Circle. I think it's done its job. Like, all those guys are over. And I think Santana and Ortiz teaming up with Eddie Kingston, leading to them winning the belts, I'd really be into that.
I think you might have something there. I think you might do.
Do we have a spot of the week, or did we end up
I saw something that I was kind of try to claim was the spot of the week when Thunder Rosa had shared this amazing photograph on Twitter of her mid action trying to do a pile driver.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, it wasn't this week.
We found that out at the last minute.
it was from the taping of Dark on December 21st, and it was against a wrestler called Gabby Ortiz, I think.
Oh, okay, right.
I think it's Gabriela Ortiz, it's pretty spectacular photo. Like, when you're watching the action, you can't actually get that angle. Like, someone must have been maybe they used a shot from a different camera. Maybe they had a different camera that wasn't used for the actual YouTube footage, and they thought, oh, look, we've got to frame this. This looks brilliant. I don't know how to explain it without sounding
like... We'll put it up on our Twitter so people can say it. We'll put it up on Twitter because we're just going to dig a hole for ourselves if we keep going.
Yeah.
We'll put it up on our Twitter. You can see it. You'll know what I mean.
Yeah. And with a little note to someone who recently passed, and the fact that we couldn't remember someone's name last week who is a member of the Acclaimed. His name is
Anthony Bowens. His name is Anthony Bowens. Yeah, rest in peace, Meatloaf. Fight Club, one of the most misunderstood films of all time. It's a brilliant film. And it's Anthony Bowens, who we continuously... I think that might be the third time I've forgotten Anthony Bowens' name. Anthony Bowens' name. I still can't even say it. Anyway.
Hopefully this will be the last time.
Yes, his name. I think we should sign off all podcasts from now on. His name is Anthony Bowens. Guys, his name is Anthony Bowens. You can support us by Spotify now have a star rating. So if you go on Spotify and give us a 5-star rating, you will get us into the Spotify algorithm, get us out to more people, more listens, happy days. Thank you for supporting the podcast and listening to it. Yeah, if you have a mate who's into wrestling, get him to check out the podcast. We will be back next week with all the stuff that's happening wrestling-wise. I'm going to try and watch some Impact so I can talk about Impact in some shape or form, but I haven't for a month, so I can't make any promises. Also, check out NWA. They're back in the studio. They're doing good stuff.
Oh God, there was another indie wrestling show called Warrior Wrestling, which featured... Brian Cage versus Will Ospreay.
Yes. Yeah. Warrior Wrestling have been, I don't know if Warrior Wrestling has some affiliation with AEW, because there's a lot of AEW wrestlers that wrestle on there as well. But anyway.
So much.
So much wrestling. And there's only so much time that the two of us can get away from our respective partners without having to leave our little dens and go and be partners and stuff. Anyway. You guys don't need to know about that. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. May your wrestling be good wrestling, and good night.
His name is Anthony Bowens.
His name is Anthony Bowens.